Hey, welcome back, everybody. Time once again for another episode of OC Spotlight. The one show, maybe the only show, that shows you the most amazing things going on here in Orange County. And have we got one for you, particularly for those of us of a certain age. We have, I'll let him introduce himself here. We have the wonderful Donnie Most in the house here today. Welcome, sir.
Well, thanks, Paul. Nice to be with you. Thanks.
So dare I say, I make some bad jokes here. Happy days are here at last.
Yeah, I've heard that line used.
I bet I didn't invent that one today here. Happy days are here at last. Happy days star Don Most, once known to the world as Donnie Most. Do you go by both, or are we trying to resist the Donnie these days?
I'm answering to both. I just liked, for billing purposes, when I left Happy Days way back in the day, I decided to go with Don Most for all my film and TV work, because at the time I was trying to make sort of a crossover, and you know, I didn't want to be stuck playing that
a kid
one
for
character.
The rest of your life. Yeah, right, exactly.
You know, so that was the, and I was older, because when I started the show I was just 20.
Wow.
And it was 27 when I was leaving, so I went with Don. But I'll answer Donnie, and sometimes I'll even use it.
Well, as I said to you offline, you know, I started life in the 80s as an entertainment publicist, and my partner and I was a partner with an older gentleman who handled Johnny Mathis for years. And Johnny, you never called him Johnny in real life, but Johnny's what the world knew him as, and that's what he answered to here. So.
Oh, that's interesting. That was the reverse.
Yeah, he always wanted to be John when you talk to him, but I don't know if it's still true. But
that's funny.
Couldn't escape from that image of it there. Well, whoever it is, we're glad you're here, because for those of us of a certain age, wasn't Happy Days one of those iconic touchstone kind of programs here? It really hit a nerve in society. I mean, Happy Days. You only have to say it, it's used to describe things. You know, oh, here we are. Happy Days are here again, or whatever. Everybody knows immediately what that means. What was it like to be part of that?
Oh, it was incredible. A wonderful, wonderful experience. You know, working with amazing people, not only the cast, but some of the people behind the scenes, like our creator, exec producer, Gary Marshall.
Yeah, right.
And our director, Jerry Paris, who was brilliant.
Paris from the Dick Van Dyke Show. I mean, I remember him when he was the neighbor next door, and he became a big director for years. Yeah.
Yeah, he was the neighbor, and he directed most of those episodes of the Dick Van Dyke Show. And then we were lucky to get Jerry, and he was a mentor and wonderful, wonderful man and brilliant director. And Gary was a great mentor for us. And then, you know, I am working with Ron Howard and Tom Bosley and, you know, people that I knew.
Marion Ross, she'd been a lot of stuff and everything.
And Marion, So then I got to start working with Henry, and I was immediately taken with Henry's talent. I got very excited very quickly, and Anson and Aaron. And it was a whirlwind, you know, because it happened fast. We came on as a mid-season replacement in January of 74.
Wow.
And then, you know, it was like I had been in California less than a year, maybe 6-7 months, growing up in Brooklyn. But I'd been pursuing singing and acting since I was about 13 in New York. Mm-hmm. So it didn't like just happen.
Yeah, you didn't
overnight.
Just walk in and this was your... No, I see. I'm looking at your Wikipedia. You had a number of acting credits, you know, before or since.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've been pounding the board, so to speak, you know, from time I was, 13 going to school for it. And then from 16 on, I started working in New York and then went out to California when I was 20. And then getting the show was just, it was like surreal. You know, it was being put into the Twilight Zone. All of a sudden you're on this, you know, hit show.
I remember meeting once, another series slightly earlier. Well, I did work for Adam West for years as Batman,
right.
One of my earlier clients, the late great Adam West. And he'd been in series before, but nothing like Batman. You know, the same, there was this something that happened when you hit one of those series. You can't walk out of your room. You show up and there are thousands of people waiting for you. You know, it's just insane. You need police escorts. Was that, I know Henry started to really take off, and the character just came from this kind of obscure once on character to this huge phenomenon. The phenomenon, I think they have his jacket in the Smithsonian now or something.
Yes, they do.
They've for all of you, I'm assuming that that just hit hard for all of you. And Adam used to tell me, I wasn't ready for that. I'd been in series. I understand attention and signing autographs, but not the not Beatlemania, not that insanity.
Right. Yeah, and it was kind of like that. I mean, when the four of us, the four guys, we got sent off to do publicity tour, ABC sent us off, and you know, we didn't realize the immensity of, you know, the impact of the show, because you're shooting it in a sound stage, you're kind of in this insulated environment,
very much,
and you're showing up in the morning and doing your job, coming home at night. But then when we go out on this PR tour, and the first stop was at this outdoor theater in Houston, we knew we were going to go and make an appearance at some fashion show or something.
And there'll be some people there, and we'll sign a few autographs, and hooray.
Yeah. Right. But then we pull up, and there's just this sea of people, teenagers, and they start rocking our limousine. You know, right. I mean, it was that kind of thing. You know,
yeah, you're the monkeys suddenly here. You're the Beatles. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that was an eye opener for us. It was crazy. And, you know, people say, well, that's got to be amazing. You know, a lot of fun and wonderful. And sure, at the beginning, it is. And you're like, oh my God, this is like a dream. But it's not like, okay, now you can turn it off. It was like, then that's just the way your life is. And so it takes some, you know, acclimating to that sort of a change.
I'll bet.
Because it's a huge change in your life.
I'll
bet. But it was amazing and wonderful in so many regards. And
Adam said that he had mixed feelings about it for years, because obviously in his case, it really did typecast him. I mean, he could never really do anything but Batman. That was so iconic. And so he was so connected with the role. Obviously, as we progressed, I don't know, did this have the same typecasting effect on you? Certainly Ron went on and directed other things. Henry said other things. Everybody else found other ways to go on.
It was definitely difficult for me at first. It was very hard for me to even just get an audition for like a movie, you know, because I told my agent, I don't want to do television for a while. I want to just try to do film, theater. Mm-hmm. So I wound up doing theater, but you couldn't even get an audition for a movie because I was so associated with that. And back then, doing television and film were like two separate,
totally different systems. Yeah, if you got pigeonholed into one, it was hard to get out of it. It was hard to go back.
It was very difficult, but I you know, kept plugging away, and then gradually would get a different kind of role, like a Star Trek Voyager, where I played like, you know, a villain in that, and then other dramatic shows and all kinds of guest starring roles, and then slowly start pecking away at it. Then some films, then a lot of really interesting independent films. And then I directed three independent films myself, then a lot of theater, and then more and more, you know, then I got a recurring role in Glee, and then I started getting some really good roles in film. I just got an award at this film festival for best supporting actor in a feature film for the movies that were submitted to this festival at the International Christian Film Festival.
There you
go. It's not really a Christian film, but some of the messages resonate for that.
Right.
But it's on Amazon Prime now.
And what's the name of that film? We'll give a little plug to it here.
Yeah, it's called Lost Heart.
Okay.
I play a very different kind of character. I play a small town pastor in the show. And another movie called MBF, Man's Best Friend, where I play a defense attorney defending a wounded vet. Another pretty intense movie, very dramatic. So very different. So especially in the last, and I just was in the Czech Republic doing a film playing a king. It had a medieval fairy tale section. So I'm getting a chance now. It's like the things are happening the way I've been wanting it to happen for a while, where I'm getting to play all different kinds of roles in interesting projects. And I think being older has helped.
Yes.
More separation than time.
Well, I note the red hair has dyed a little bit, not quite as flaming red as I recall from the earlier days.
That has faded. The red has faded for sure.
So let's talk about the real reason you're here and that you're coming down to Orange County. Who knew that there's such a thing called the Don Most Orchestra? I'm sorry, right. I didn't know that you had this foray into music on the side here.
Absolutely. Well, you know, more and more people are starting to learn, but I'm not surprised a lot of people wouldn't know. I think I alluded to it earlier, I started out pursuing singing before acting when I was very young. I was 13 going to a school in Manhattan for singing, dancing, some acting, but it was more the singing. And I actually wound up being picked to be part of a nightclub review. And I performed that the summer I was turning 15 years old in the Catskill Mountains up state New York, wow, in all the hotels.
That's where you start the singing, and the comedy and singing seems to come
comedy
out of
the and singing. Yeah. So I was doing that before I was really focusing on acting. After that summer, I switched my focus towards acting and then started getting busy, which then, of course, led to me going out to California and landing Happy Days after some other roles. Mm-hmm. So the singing was something, but see, the kind of music that I loved was all the great jazz standards.
Yeah.
Well, and the American Songbook.
You're talking to an old jazz DJ back in the, I came out of college at the University of Michigan and went into real radio. And wherever possible, tried to work in jazz. It's been a shrinking medium, but I think it has never really gone away.
It's not gone away, and I don't think it will. But yeah, I mean, jazz was a big part of the music that I loved growing up, and some of the great, you know, singers of the jazz standards, all, you know, the Sinatras and Tony Bennett's and, you know, Dino and some of the great female jazz singers I was really into, like Ella Fitzgerald.
Ella and all those, yeah.
And all of them, Dinah Washington. So I loved all that music, and it just wasn't very commercial to do when in the 70s, when I was on Happy Days, because that was looked upon like my parents' music or something like that.
Exactly.
You know? Right. But then it had a nice, beautiful resurgence starting in the late 80s, Harry Connick doing it, and then Tony Bennett on the MTV show, and then Natalie
Michael
Cole,
Bublé, that
and Diana Krall.
Yes,
So I realized, I said, you know what? If I'm ever going to, this is the music I've loved my whole life. I did it before I was an actor. If I'm ever going to do it, now's, I better start going. You know, I'm not getting younger. So about 6 years ago, I put together a show, found a musical director, and started off doing a jazz club here in LA, and got a great reaction. So then I said, I'm going to keep doing it. And I started doing clubs in New York and here in LA, and then all over the country I was performing, and even did a CD called The Most, Mostly Swinging. And
and
with a great big band, 17-piece band, led by Willie Murillo, who's an incredibly talented producer, trumpet player, arranger, and he's going to be leading a big band again for me on the 17th when I perform.
Part of it's the economics. How do you support a 17-piece orchestra in these days here? I mean, you know, that's what killed it back in the day. You know, it's one thing to have a rock group, 4-piece guitar, bass, drums.
Right.
That's easy to travel around. It's easy to be the Beatles. But it was hard to sustain those orchestras through into the 40s and 50s. Yeah,
absolutely. It's that the economics of it are very difficult, but you know, I'm finding a way to make this work. You know, mainly because we're doing it for the love of it. And I haven't gotten to do it in over a year because, you know, I haven't been able to do the live performing thing. So when I was asked to do this, I could have come in with, you know, I've done the show with 5 pieces.
I was going to say six or eight, or smaller.
I could have done that, but I wanted to do the big band thing again. So we're going for it.
All right. Well, let's give a plug here. We love the folks at the Muckenthaler Cultural Center. The Muckenthaler, for those of you who haven't heard some of our earlier shows, folks, you got to go check this place out. Muckenthaler is, I don't know how to describe it. It's an old mansion that somebody built in, I think, the 20s or something. Back when there were lots of old mansions up there in North Orange County and Fullerton. And this one has survived because I think they put it in some sort of trust, or the family held onto it and turned it into a cultural center for the city. And they do concerts. They have a beautiful, wonderful, it seats what, 200-300 people or something like that?
I think the amphitheater that I'll be at seats 300. Yeah.
There you go. So it's this beautiful old mansion that they use for weddings and cultural events and all sorts of other stuff. And then once a year, they have this wonderful jazz festival that's been going on for years there, and they get top talent like the Don Most Orchestra.
That's right.
I'm telling you, this is a place to go, and it's beautiful. It's under the stars. It's in an, my wife and I love going there. We look forward. We're going to come out and make a point of coming to this one.
Oh, great.
I think you got a couple of nostalgias going here. You got, you know, clearly there's a nostalgia for the music, particularly as we get older. And they really emphasize, it fits the jazz era that this house came from and all that.
Yeah.
But obviously there's a nostalgia. I'm sorry to say, we've all missed you. We all want to know what's happening to all you guys, because we all watched you and loved you and grew up with all you guys, you know?
Yeah. Well, I hope people come on out. I think you'll have a great time. An incredible group of musicians that are just, you know, phenomenal, really. And I have a wonderful time doing it. And it's, I'm not some Johnny come lately to this. Like I said, I mean, I was doing this before I even started acting, so it's in my blood. And
how would we describe your voice? I've never heard you sing. In fact, how would you? I mean, are you a tenor? Are you a bass? Are you gruff? Whatever.
I'm more in the sort of a higher baritone, kind of in the Sinatra key. Mm-hmm. This is Sinatra, Bobby Darin mode.
There you go.
That's because those were guys. I saw Darin at the Copacabana in New York when I was 18.
Wow, and that would be something.
So I loved all those guys. Bobby he could do that stuff as good as any of them.
He really could. He was sort of the last of that shift from that era to the 60s and whatever else we became here.
Yeah, he was a great, great talent. So that's kind of the same. I'm in that tonality, I would say, in that range.
So how long does it take for the audience to shake off the image of Ralph, the comedian, the bad comedian, if I dare say that, always on Happy Days, you know, groaning at his jokes and stuff here, before they set that aside and say, hey, this is something different than I expected here?
I think about 1 minute. I think maybe 30 seconds.
That big band kicks in and the rest of it fades away.
And I start singing, and it's like people like come up to me. They're like, whoa, we had no idea. You know, where have you been keeping this?
Well, I'll tell you why it surprised me too. And I hope this doesn't offend you or bother you, but I don't know why they never had you sing on the show. I know Anson had a singing career, and they used to sort of bring him out towards the end, and he'd get to sing a song, sort of like my vague remembrances of the old Ozzy Harriet show, and Ricky got to come out and sing once in a while and turn that into a career. So I always felt that Anson, they were pushing Anson to sing.
Right.
I never heard anybody else sing. I never heard you sing on the show. Well, at least I don't remember it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of a long story. There was a little political stuff going on. You know, I tried, Gary had basically established Anson as a singer, and it's a whole long story as to how that happened.
Right.
And then when I told him, I can do this. I can get to do songs once in a while. And he was like, he didn't want to mess. He had established Potsy as the singer.
Right.
I was the comedian, and he didn't want to mess with the branding of that. So but they were nice. They gave me, there were a couple of shows where I actually did get to sing. You might've missed it, but there were, you know, like a special Valentine's show where I did My Funny Valentine, and then there was a marathon show where I sang a song. So, and then I'd be singing backup. But yes, people, I get that all the time. How come you didn't sing on Happy Days when they see me?
If I would expect to see you doing a comedy act, because clearly you were billed as the comedian in the show, and I thought that was your background, and that's what you know, Anson sang, you did comedy. There was a nice split between the two. Right. And never the two shall meet here, you know.
No, and the truth is, I was not that kind of guy in real life. I was never the comedian in the group of my friends. I was the straight man, you know. I knew people like Ralph, you know, so I was able to draw upon them.
Yeah.
But I was not like that at all.
Well, so the Don Most Orchestra will be appearing at the Muckenthaler Cultural Center coming up soon, June 17th. That's a Thursday at 7:30 at night. I got to believe this is going to be a sellout, number one, because that music is hot, and the nostalgia wrapped in with the music and your Happy Days connection, all that kind of stuff. Plus, they just get a great crowd there. I mean, they really do get a good crowd of people.
That's
there,
so. Great. Come on out, everyone, and we'll make it, it'll be a blast. I know it's going to be a
Well, fun go fun check out, don't worry about spelling Muckenthaler. I never can. They just have simplified it. It's called The Muck for those in the know. And you can go to TheMuck, M-U-C-K.org, and you can find all about the entire jazz series, but particularly this one. Are you one of the last in the series? I know they had Barbara Morris in there, very well-known famous jazz singer there to open it.
Yeah, I'm the last. Mine's the last show a week from tomorrow on Thursday, June 17th. The last one of the series.
And so do you tour? Is this just once in a while? I can't believe you could take a 17-piece group out on the road.
No, I can't do that. Yeah, right. No, when I start doing it again, because
COVID, clearly
closed down. When I start doing it again, what I usually do is, you know, if it's in L.A. or New York where I have a group of musicians that are regulars to me, sometimes I can do the big band. But when I travel, I bring a musical director with me, and then we'll hire local musicians.
Oh, I see. Pick up musicians locally. Yeah. They can read the charts and everything
here. Exactly. Read the charts. And it might be 7, 8, 9, 10 guys sometimes. And once in a while, the big band on the road, but that's tough. It is. The economics just make it
I
so
grew,
hard.
I didn't grow up in LA. I grew up in the Midwest and then came seeking my fame and fortune. As I said, I fell into being an entertainment publicist. That's as close as I got to that circle of stars that you all were swimming in here. But I always wondered why LA wasn't more of a jazz town. K Jazz, the great jazz station, one of the few left around. Leonard Feather, the great reviewer for the Times and other things here. The Baked Potato, Don Randy's place, because they had all these studio, what did they used to call them? The Wrecking Crew that played on everybody's albums from Sinatra to Sonny and Cher. And most of them were jazz musicians. That's how they could pick up and play anything here.
Play anything, yeah.
But I don't know that jazz really was, they don't think of LA as a jazz town. This is an East Coast thing, not a West Coast thing. Do you find that still true?
Yeah, I guess to some degree. I mean, there are some, you know, Catalina's Jazz Club.
They get a lot of good
jazz acts. And Vibrato's
Herb Albert's place up in Beverly Hills there. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think there's still some, you know, a presence there that's pretty good. I think I haven't gone out that much myself because even before COVID, I don't know, just, you know, got to a place where I wasn't going out as much at, you know, to clubs and stuff. But well, it'll be interesting to see as things.
The only explanation I can say was I'd look in the mirror and I know why.
It's just there's that. Yeah, I guess that's the explanation.
I guess that's the explanation.
Pretty easy.
Pretty easy. Just say, am I going to go out tonight? Nah, go home. I think I'll just stay here. Well, exactly. I so much look forward when they gave us a lineup of things here. We periodically do things here to promote the Muck and what's happening in Orange County. Great place, great venue, and great lineup always for the jazz show. But when I said the Don Most Orchestra, I said, oh, that's one. I'm sorry. Yeah. I got to put on my fan hat. I graduated in 1974. So when you came on, I was just graduating high school. Oh, you were me, you know, you were my era, you know.
Yeah, that's when we came on the air. That's right.
We were there. Absolutely. Well, I so much look forward to doing this and to seeing you there.
Good. I'm glad you're coming to the show with your wife. That's great.
Yep. We'll check it out. We'll try not to be too gushing and fanboy here and not to bring my Happy Days paraphernalia and have you sign it. I'll bet people bring out also because there was a lot of stuff with Happy lunchboxes.
Yeah, there were all that.
Did they have a doll? You must have had a doll or something with you on it there.
There was a Ralph doll. I've got one.
You got one somewhere here.
Right.
All that stuff. Well, I so much look forward to it. I'm glad that life's been good to you since then. It seems like you've been active and done lots of things here. And you've moved on to new heights. Maybe you've gone back to your roots. Maybe that's it. The Don Most Orchestra, where you started
and a whole new phase on the acting side, I feel it's been happening. And I'm looking forward to a lot more down the line with that.
Well, we are too. All right, the Don Most Orchestra. Go check it out at themuck.org. It's the last in their great, they have a series of concerts for this jazz festival, and they're the closing act. Who could go on? Who could go on after the Don Most Orchestra?
That's right.
I can't imagine. Right.
It'll be June 17th, Thursday night.
All right. It's 7:30 out at the Muck. Thank you so much, Don Most, for joining us here on OC Talk Radio.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Well, there you have it, folks. Another reason to tune in each and every week to the OC Spotlight. Streaming live. Torrance County's only community radio station. The University of California, Irvine's Beal Applied Innovation Center.